The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 25, Text Number 22. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on March 27th, 2009, in Helsinki, Finland.
Today we are blessed with this wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 25, The Glories of Devotional Service. Text number 22. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Mayananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti yedridham madkrite chvakcha karmanas Shaktasvat jana bhandava Mayananyena bhavena Bhaktim kurvanti yedridham Madkrite chakta karmanas Shaktasvat jana bhandava Translation and Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. Purport. A person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu because he renounces everything, his home, his comfort, his friends, his relatives, and his duties to friends and to a family. He renounces everything for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sannyasi is generally in the renounced order of life, but his renunciation will be successful only when his energy is employed in the service of the Lord with great austerity. It is said here, therefore, Bhaktim kurvanti yedridham. A person who seriously engages in the service of the Lord and is in the renounced order of life is a sadhu. A sadhu is one who has given up all responsibility to society, family, and worldly humanitarianism, simply for the service of the Lord. As soon as he takes his birth in the world, a person has so many responsibilities and obligations to the public, to the demigods, to the great sages, to the general living beings, to his parents, to the family forefathers, and to many others. When he gives up all such obligations for the sake of the service of the Supreme Lord, he is not punished for sense renunciation of obligation. But if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the law of nature. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam
sajivam sudaitam savadutam purijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakon Vitamscha
So, last night we were studying about Mahatmas. Now today we are studying about Sadhus. This is very auspicious. What is the difference between a Mahatma and a Sadhu? Actually, they are the same thing. Sadhu, he cuts off all the Maya. He cuts out all the Duratma consciousness. And therefore he becomes Sadhu Mahatma. So, one has to become free from all of those things that cause one misery. That's the point. Why foolishly hold on to those things that are the very cause of our suffering? Sadhu means he's intelligent. He doesn't hold on to things that cause anxiety and misery. Dislike relatives is one thing. It's sometimes said relatives are relative. In other words, they're related to the body. As long as I think that these people are my relatives, my parents, my cousins, my aunties, my uncles. These are my relatives, and the other people are not my relatives, you see. Then we're on the material plane. Yashatma buddhi kunape tritaduke svadhi kalatra dishu bom ijadi yatritta kupe salile nakarhachid janesh avageyushu sa eva gokuraha. If you think that those persons who are related to your material body are your relatives and the other people are not your relatives, you're in maya. You're a cow and an ass, Bhagavatam said. Actually, everyone is our relative. We love everyone as our family members. Because we are all in the dynasty of Krishna. We are in the Krishna Gotra. We are all in the Krishna dynasty. Therefore, we love everyone. We love our material parents. And we love everybody else's material parents too. Because we're all one family. The whole world, we are one big, big family. This they have forgotten, that's all. Everyone is my brother and my sister, you see. Even a little ant crawling on the ground, you see. He is my brother. I don't want to hurt that little ant, you see. Just like we all know the story, I think maybe everyone knows, but it's a very nice example. That Magrari, the hunter, he came in a dynasty of hunters. That was his occupation. But he was trained in a very strange way by his father that you should kill the animals half dead and enjoy their agony as they slowly die. What a bizarre way, a horrible thing he was taught by his father, how to kill the animals in the forest. So Narada Muni chanced upon the scene and he saw this ghastly activity of this hunter. So he first gave the hundred the order that why are you killing them halfway? You should kill them full. Put them out of their misery immediately. You see? So Magrari, he didn't realize what he was getting into. But Narada Muni was very intelligent. It's like the salesman. Once he gets his foot, somehow I get the foot in the door. Once he gets his foot in the door, then it's a guaranteed sale, you see. The trick is to get the foot in the door. So to get his foot in the door, Magrari gave him an instruction that he could accept. Kill them all the way. But then immediately, as soon as Magrari accepted that instruction, then he got another instruction. Stop killing altogether and break your bow. Break my bow? This is my means of livelihood. How I'll live if I break my bow? Well, you do not worry. I will take care of all of your arrangements. I will see that you're well fed. You and your wife, you go to one place and you get a cottage and you worship the Tulsi. And don't worry, I will send all of your eatables. So, sometime later, Narada Muni is flying all over the universe, even to the spiritual world he can go by his mystic powers. He's flying with his companion. They are both mystic yogis. They have great power. Parvat Muni also. So Parvat Muni and Narada Muni, they come back again to see. Narada Muni says, let's see how my disciples are doing. Just like we like to travel to see how our disciples are doing, make sure they're not in Maya. You see? Spiritual masters, they like to travel to see how their disciples are doing. If they're Krishna conscious, they're properly situated, you see. So Narada Muni, he wanted to travel and make sure that Magrari was doing well, he was properly situated. And, of course, what do you do when you see your spiritual master? Immediately, you fall on the ground, obeisances, you see. So, immediately, Magrari is going for obeisances, but he notices the little ants, his little brother. Formerly, he was killing the animals half dead and enjoying their agony, and now he is so carefully brushing the ants away so he doesn't hurt even one little ant, you see. This is sadhu. A sadhu sees every single living entity as his dear, beloved family member. Therefore, he wants to preach. He wants to distribute books. He wants to save them. He wants to distribute prasad. He wants to tell everyone about Krishna because these are my dear family members and they are suffering in the cycle of birth and death. So the sadhu, the Mayavadi, he wants to just cut himself off from everything and go into his own nirjana bhajana, you see. That is the Mayavadi. He is not such a great sadhu. He is low-level sadhu. He may have cut off all contact with friends and relatives, but his renunciation is imperfect. It is incomplete. But that sadhu who embraces every living entity as his family member and who wants to give each and every one of his family members the prime benediction of Krishna consciousness, you see, that is the highest level sadhu. So that is the type of sadhu that we read about here in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. That kind of sadhu. Not the one that says, oh, I hate my friends, I hate my relatives, I want nothing to do with them, let them go to hell, I will be saved. No. He wants to make everyone Krishna conscious. Actually, Prabhupada told us, they made a resolution one time, the GBC made a resolution that every devotee should see that his parents, every devotee should see that his parents have a subscription to Back to Godhead magazine. And Prabhupada, he said, yes, that's good, you like that. So it's not that our renunciation is not, oh, let my parents go to hell, let my old friends go to hell. No, we give them Krishna. That is our renunciation. We give them Krishna. Prabhupada was very, very respectful to the parents. Actually, when Brahmananda and Garga Muni's mother came, Prabhupada told you, offer your obeisances to your mother. So that is actually the Vedic system. We offer our obeisances to our parents, you see. But we renounce being under their misdirection. Even though they mean well, they don't know, in most cases, the parents of our devotees. Of course, now we have devotees who are having children. That's another thing. But most of us here in this room, at least, our parents were not devotees, and they meant well. They advised us in this way and that. My father said, son, why don't you just do something beneficial, like get a job in a hospital, you know, mop the floors in a hospital or something, you know, really do something beneficial for society. You know, clean up the stool from the hospital beds or something. You know, do something really good for society. So dad certainly meant well, but, you know, their knowledge just isn't there. They didn't have the good fortune of understanding the Prabhupada's, you know, the depth of, and the veracity, the truthfulness of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. So, such persons, we don't surrender to them and give up Krishna consciousness to work in some hospital, you know, cleaning up the stools from the beds. No, we accept the spiritual master as our father. You see, the first birth is from mother and father, and second birth is from Guru and Vedas. So, we take that second birth as more important than our first birth. But we are still respectful to that first birth. Not that we have to be. Actually, we're free of any obligation. But we do it for their benefit, because we are in the mood of preaching. We're in the mood of helping them. We're in the mood of saving them. And because they have some attachment for us, we can utilize that attachment to benefit them, to help them. So in this way, the preacher, the preaching sadhu, who is the highest level sadhu, he can preach to his former acquaintances, to his family members, and make them Krishna conscious. But it's not that he's under their direction, that my old friends want me to get together with them and have a party. He may go there and distribute prasadam and have a kirtan, but he won't go there and smoke marijuana, something like that. He may go there to give them Krishna consciousness. So in this way, the ISKCON sadhu, you see, he is the highest level sadhu. He's not like the Mayavadi who has to run away and hide somewhere. Can't deal with the material energy. He has to try to hide from the material energy. Actually, you cannot hide from the material energy. The easiest, most powerful way is to conquer the material energy is not to run away from it, but to engage it in the service of Krishna. That is the way to conquer the material nature. It's like here, you have a very nice city, Helsinki. You have a very nice country, Finland, you see. So it's not that to become Krishna conscious, you have to run to Vrindavan. Of course, you can go to Vrindavan Mayapur for some spiritual rejuvenation. That's very nice. But your duty is to remain here in Finland and revolutionize this place, you see. That is your duty. And that is the highest form of renunciation. To agree to remain in that material atmosphere and engage that material atmosphere in the service of Krishna. Instead of just thinking of your own Krishna consciousness, you see, by living in Mayapur Vrindavan, you are thinking of how we can benefit these Finnish people. If we don't preach to them, we are Finnish devotees. If we don't preach to the Finnish people, who's going to preach to them? You see? So Prabhupada would instruct, I remember. Some devotee would join. He would say, now you make that center where you join, make it a grand success. That would be the order of Prabhupada. You have joined in that center. Now you dedicate your life for making that center a grand success. So you finished devotees, you have joined here, our movement, and here in this Helsinki temple. So now your lives should be totally dedicated to making this center a grand success, you see. This is how you become true sadhus. The sadhu is always thinking how to deliver all of suffering humanity back to home, back to Godhead. Even if he is not successful in doing that, his perfection is guaranteed, or hers, same thing. His perfection is guaranteed whether he's successful or not in that preaching mission, but his endeavor qualifies him to go back to Godhead, guaranteed. Because the sadhu has endeavored to deliver the suffering humanity back to home, back to Godhead. He's dedicated himself to deliver the finished people back to home, back to Godhead, you see. His liberation is guaranteed, and anyone who follows such a sadhu, they will also become liberated. Shri Gornitai ki jai, Shri Radha Damodar ki jai. So this, in a nutshell, is our Krishna consciousness movement. Become Krishna conscious and revolutionize this planet with Krishna consciousness. So I can ask now if any of the sadhus have a question. Or if you're thinking you're not a sadhu and you still have a, everyone's welcome to ask questions. Yes.
Prabhu, thank you for your inspiring lecture. So I'd like to ask about preaching strategies. Like, should we only stick to this kind of pure Krishna conscious preaching, or can we also utilize this kind of material knowledge like vegetarianism or environmental subjects?
According to time, place, and circumstance. I know our late ISKCON Shridhar Swami summed it up very nicely. He was really good at poetically summarizing different issues. He said, it's okay to come in like a needle, as long as you come out like a plow. Now, if you can use some technique like vegetarian cooking classes, one of my disciples in Russia, Bhakti Lata Devi Das, she's doing that. She has turned her home into a center, a Namahat center. So she has cooking classes every week, and right before the Sunday Love Feast program. So they come for the cooking class and they just stay on through the Sunday Love Feast. And so she attracts them with the cooking class, but then it feeds right into the standard ISKCON program, see. Now if all you do is, if you go in like a needle and you come out like a needle, what did you accomplish? You just wasted your time, basically. But if you can go in like a needle and come out like a plow, like Bhakti Lata Devi Dasi is doing, you see. And it's very good. So, just like you advertise Festival of India, you see, you don't advertise directly Krishna Bhakti. But it's a nice way of, you know, coming in like a needle, and then going in like a needle and coming out like a plow. But then what do they get? They get pure Krishna consciousness. Use the idea of an Indian cultural festival. There's some dancing, and oh, I get to see a dancing Indian girl or something, you know. So in this way, yes, if we can utilize, just like our Indidhanda Swami, very festive programs he do, he attracts people with the idea of a festival, you see. But then he gives them Krishna consciousness. So as long as there's no harm going in like a needle, as long as you come out like a plow, we have to make sure they really get Krishna consciousness. We're not just wasting our time, you know. Teaching hatha yoga, and that's all we're doing is teaching hatha yoga, and they're not getting bhakti yoga. It's a useless waste of time. But you can use a technique and give them Krishna consciousness, then it's very good. But you have to give them, the test is, do they become Krishna conscious? Are you teaching them the chant Hare Krishna? Are you teaching them how to offer their food to Krishna, etc. That has to be, those things have to come. See. Any other questions? Everybody's satisfied now. All the obstacles have been cleared away in the path of bhakti. Everyone's going full steam ahead now to Uttama Bhakti. No difficulties. Everything's fine, no difficulty. Yes?
Prabhu, sometimes our mind says to us that we cannot surrender more from this point or go further.
Sometimes our mind says, I can't surrender any further. This is all I can handle right now?
Yeah. So how should we preach to the mind?
Ah. Well, there's one technique. Everybody has their comfort zone. Well, I can handle this much austerity, but not beyond that, right? We all have our comfort zone. So the trick is this. Don't try to just completely blow, say, I'm just going to give up my comfort zone and go, you know, become a pure devotee immediately. It's probably can't do that. But here's the thing. Just push yourself a little bit beyond your comfort zone. Just a little bit beyond your comfort zone. And keep pushing just a little bit beyond your comfort zone until that becomes fully comfortable. And then push a little further. And a little, and that way you can, you know, you can make steady progress. Instead of being a flash in the pan, which, you know, we had many devotees in ISKCON. We saw they, you know, they became ISKCON superstars practically overnight, and then two or three years later they were gone. They don't even show up at Ratha Yatra Festival anymore. They were ISKCON superstars, you see. That means they wanted to become a big name, and they did all kinds of austerities to become a big, big, famous, you know, preacher. And then, you know, now you can't even know where they are anymore. They don't even chant Hare Krishna. So the trick is, push yourself just a little bit beyond your comfort zone. Something you can steadily maintain, you know, just, I'm going to push myself a little bit harder, a little bit more. Just slightly beyond my comfort zone. And that way you can keep pushing yourself and keep advancing and advancing and advancing throughout the whole life. Now, specifically, you asked about the mind. And I've many times explained this. You probably remember, but, you know, there's two ways to deal with the mind. There's the soft rose approach given by poet Govindadas. Bhajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhaya charanada vindade. My dear mind, please engage yourself in the devotional service of the divine son of Nanda Maharaj. You see, that's the rose, soft rose approach. But we know there's the acharya, he has two approaches. He has the soft rose and he has the thunderbolt. And so you can also launch the thunderbolt approach, and that is given by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. When you get up in the morning, go to that shoe rack and grab the biggest, heaviest pair of shoes you can find and beat the hell out of your rascal mind 100 times. And then in the evening, give the shoes a break. Now it's time to go up to the broom closet. Get that thickest, heaviest broom and again beat the living crud out of that rascal mind 100 times. You see? That's the other way, you see. Now you can do whatever is best, works best for you. You can, if the soft rose approach is more appealing to you and it works, sits better with your psychology, you can use the soft rose approach. But if you find that the thunderbolt is more effective to bring your mind out of control, you can use the thunderbolt. Or you use a combination. You can use the rose one day and the thunderbolt the next day. Or you can just needs the rose every day, you know. That's all they can handle their whole life is the rose. And some people may think, well, I'm just going to use the thunderbolt. I like the thunderbolt. So whatever works best for you, the rose or the thunderbolt. But somehow bring that mind under control, you see. Yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalamastaram tatastatam yayoyayutam atmanyiva vishamniya. From wherever the mind wanders, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. The devotee is like the mother, and the mind is like the little child, the naughty little child. You just have to keep training. Okay, mind, stop thinking about, having sex with that girl over there. You shouldn't do that, mind. Or stop thinking about having sex with that guy over there, whatever, according to your situation. We have to curb these kind of thoughts down. Telling the mind, this is taboo. You shouldn't be thinking about that, mind. Because it's not beneficial for you. Just curb it down, nip it, stop it. Think of Krishna. You see? Just think of Krishna. Because then as you start thinking of Krishna, Madan Mohan, the attractor of Cupid, you see, Cupid who can fill our hearts with arrows and devastate us with lusty desires, as soon as Madan Mohan comes around, Cupid forgets about making anybody lusty and he just becomes enchanted by Krishna. So if somebody's being harassed by the arrows of Cupid, you just got to invoke Madan Mohan to come on the scene, and Cupid will forget about shooting those arrows of lust into your heart. And you'll just be attracted by the beauty of Krishna, Madan Mohan, you see, the attractor of Cupid. So, if you can invoke, call for that mercy of Madan Mohan. Of course, in Vrindavan, there are three deities. There's Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda, Radha Gopina. So the first deity, establishing that relationship, sambandha, you see, that is Madan Mohan. So in the very beginning, we curb down the lust by accepting that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, and my actual happiness is simply to engage in the service of Krishna. We have to understand this point. We have to be fixed in this point. And Madan Mohan will bless us. That will not become disturbed by these lusty thoughts or greedy thoughts or angry thoughts or illusion thoughts or envious thoughts. So any other question? Everyone's happy now. Ready, fully enlivened and fired up for a life full of bhakti. Yes?
Prabhu, you mentioned at the end of your answer the six enemies.
Yes.
And you mentioned that how Madan Mohan can kind of drive them away.
Yes, yes.
So, do they have some combining factor?
Do they have?
A combining factor, the six enemies.
Factor. What is the combining factor? Yeah, they all fall within they are all resultant symptoms of a person who is infected with the disease known as ahankar. That is their common root. If you can root out ahankar, then automatically you get rid of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. They're all gone. They are all, the common factor is that ahankar. So, ahankar means you think that you're the center of enjoyment. You think you're the center of the universe, the center of existence. That's ahankar. Ahankar means you foolishly think that to be happy, you have to be the enjoyer. But that is madness. That is illusion. That is lust. That is anger. That is greed. That is envy. You see. As soon as ahankar is there, all those six things become present. All six of them become present. As soon as ahankar is present. So the Mayavadi, to get rid of ahankar, they say the self is false. Merge into Brahman. That's their approach. But that is not a very good approach. Because they actually don't get free of ahankar. They actually puff up their ahankar. That yes, I now am God. In the name of being liberated, they become even more entangled in the false ego. I am God. I am Brahman. I am the supreme. You see? So the devotee, he brings in the, he gets rid of that false ego, ahankara, bringing in the real ego. Ego means identity. He brings in the real ego that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. In this way, as soon as you awaken the actual identity, the real ego, that I, Jivero Sarupa Hoy, Krishna Nitya Das, it's so sweet, it's so wonderful, it's so nectarian, it's so thrilling, it's so exciting, it's such a great adventure to be a devotee of Krishna. That the ahankar melts away. Who needs that stupid illusion anyway that I'm the center of the universe? Who needs it? It's just the cause of misery. So our time is now up. 8:30, we good stopping point. Well, we got 60 seconds. Anybody, any last quick question? All right then. Thank you all very much. Gandharad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.